On tonight's amazing, action-packed episode of the Lethal Mullet Podcast, we cover Emilio Estevez's joining Cuba Gooding Jr. and, of course, Steven Dorff as they battle the man that put the a-hole in music, the one, the only, of course, the amusing and powerful Dennis Leary in Judgment Night, directed by Predator 2 Stephen Hopkins. Frankie, where are you? We're looking for you, Frankie, Francis.
Shit, I can't believe he's gonna find me. No, he can't find me.
Let me try something else. Francis, get down here. Come on now.
That sounds like my cousin. That can't be my cousin, surely.
Francis, your wife's worried about you. Get down here now.
All right, I'm coming.
Get you now, sucker.
All right, lights, camera, action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper? Again.
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
G'day, mate. How you going? Here's the mullet. Folks, you asked for it. You're getting it. Judgment Night. You wanted this for a while, and you know what? I found it. Pretty good DVD copy to go and revisit this VHS classic night out at, of course, B-grade cinema in some ways we would say, but it was a big film. It's not B-grade. It's huge. It was out there and it did its duty, folks. It was an amazing flick and we're going to talk about that tonight. While we sink down some B-Tudor Bitter. That's right, one of Western Queensland's favourite beers. And, of course, they even say it's number one. But it's a nice lager and we're going to be getting into that tonight while we talk about this great film, starring obviously more Dennis Leary than you can take, and poke a stick at. And of course, we've got Cuba Gooding Jr., Steven Dorff, and of course, the one and only Billy the Kid himself, Emilio Estevez. That's right, Emilio Estevez. When it was cool to be Emilio Estevez back in the day, still cool, folks. Still love the guy. It's awesome. And we got Young Guns 3 on the way, folks. Did you know that? I bet you didn't know that. Yeah, no, you did because we told you about it last year. So, you know, it's all happening here, folks. And before we do any of the fun stuff here on the Lethal Mullet, we're going to let you know about where you can find this show and many others like it.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
Oi, how's your man?
Welcome to the dojo. Leave your shoes outside the door.
All right, folks, big chat. Obviously coming up with the movie of the week, of course, Judgment Night. But a quick chat about some of the stuff in martial arts I've been doing. One thing I'm studying right now is American Kenpo, so I'm really getting into a lot of the many hits that are done in that style. It's definitely something that's using all the weapons attached to your body, of course, using the limbs in ways that I've never done in any of the
Japanese and Okinawan styles of karate have done. So really enjoying that. That's a lot of fun. And it certainly is helping my Gokan Ryu as well get better. And certainly when it comes to Kumite. But I've got to say, folks, I've been getting into even more weaponry, folks. And one of those is, of course, the Kama, which is, a weapon that, I've never really used before, to be honest with you. I've used similar ones. It's basically a sickle. And obviously that's something that's used on farms in Japan. The Kama is one that was used, of course, by Bujinkan when I was with them as well. And it's obviously the one that was modified by the Shinobi no Mono, or even the Samurai. The Samurai used the same weapon. And, of course, the Kuzari Gama. And, of course, this was a sickle with the end of it, or even sometimes the blade, having a chain attached to it, and quite a lengthy chain, usually a couple of meters long. And at the end of that was some type of weight, whether it's a squared weight or a ball. And, of course, that is used to snare and entangle a swordsman or a would-be attacker. And the sickle would come in and be used to, obviously, dispatch that target. You can see these sorts of things used, obviously, in various samurai and ninja movies over the years. And the Kama is definitely something that's been part of Kabuto for a long time, because it's really an Okinawan weapon. As much as it is a Japanese, feudal weapon as well. So between that, and I've also been doing, obviously, the work with the Legionnaire's sword, of course, the sword of the Roman Legion, and the Gladius is quite something different. I've never really been able to put my finger on it exactly, apart from the weight of it, it's a different weight, certainly is a different balance than definitely the Eastern, disciplines of sword that I'm used to. So using a lot of these weapons, it's interesting that your body still moves in only so many ways. We've only got so much movement that our arms, shoulders, elbows, hands, you name it, legs can do. And, of course, how our body can move fully with those. So between using those and obviously, too, now some of the other weapons that I've got, the Kukri, really starting to free up the extended mind and the extended parts of the body when it comes to weaponry. It's certainly, I think, as far as form of exercise, it's making me move a lot more steadily, but also flexibly. And I still got a long way to go, and I certainly got a lot of weight to lose, which is something else I've been doing. A lot of my training I've been doing is also running and walking as well. And I've lost 3 kilos so far in doing that training, and you can follow me on social media. You can see that I'm doing that all over the Gold Coast here now too. I'm going to be doing some bigger runs and certainly some bush walks with that too. And my key is to get down to maybe not quite as low as I was when I was younger, but I'll get as close as I damn well can. And a betterment for my life. And of course, my training is going to be great for cardiovascular fitness. All here. Of course, the Little Mullet.
Hi. Mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been a real busy day, oh, wow.
Right on, mate.
Hey. Yeah.
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, have a nice, cold beverage. And enjoy the show.
Well, here you go, mate. Yeah, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
All right, here we go, folks. We're going to chat about this great film, and certainly one that, if it's on TV, on cable, or in this case, streaming, I'm just going to watch all of it. It's one of those nights at the cinema that just continues to, no matter what, be one that you want to watch. Because you care about the characters, you care about the predicament, and it's a fun flick, regardless. You actually care about the bad guys, to a certain extent, because they're cool. So, but I think it's what's interesting is this film holds up in ways that I didn't even expect. Because what I think is interesting about the film in particular, right, is that when it comes down to the characters obviously going on this excursion, together, the guys' night out, we kind of expected something back in the 90s that would be obviously off the rails, and it does go off the rails very quickly. But we've got a lot of movies like it, not quite as well put out. There's a certain element of horror to the film as well, but also a certain element of cool. And the cool comes in the form of Dennis Leary and, of course, his thugs that are out to, of course, take out any witnesses that saw deals going bad and all that sort of thing. So it's an interesting one. It's one on the streets, and it's one really in the wilderness of this, you know, dark, seedy neighborhood, which really lays out this horror-packed action thriller. One that is, without a doubt, one of the great action movies of the time. Stephen Hopkins, obviously doing Predator 2. It's probably the biggest one I'd remember him doing at the time.
Far better director than people give him credit for, I think. Certainly, I always enjoyed the films that he did in the States, and they're certainly a lot of fun. Predator 2 is a hell of a lot of fun. Lost in Space, and of course, this one as well, which we're about to get into and chat about why it is one of those things. We're going to get straight into the cast first in a sec, but let's give you a little bit of background on what this film is.
You know, James Cameron said it best once with Aliens being 40 miles of bad road. Well, this is more like 2Ks of bad road, because these guys are literally going to be running through some of the worst terrain on basically a sidetrack that no one ever wanted to take. And that's what this film, at its heart, is all about. So we're going to have a look at that now, folks. This film is all about, of course, A Bloke's Night Out. You know, this is something that kind of echoed the sort of things that people would do and go through. Now, the film came out in 1993. It's an action crime thriller, directed by, of course, Stephen Hopkins, starring the actors that we've talked about, and, of course, one that we'll talk more about very much so in this, and, of course, that's Jeremy Piven. So what's the story? Frank White and his brother John and their friends, both Mike Peterson and Ray Cochran, basically going to have a night out at the boxing in Chicago. And to do it in style, Ray Cochran has picked up an RV, which is one he's got on loan and one that he's going to basically buy if things pan out. So he thought, we'll give it a trial, see how it's like. As these guys take off, leave their families behind, they find that the freeway is completely blocked off. And it's in that gridlock state that we all know freeway can be like. Because the boxing match is only, you know, so many hours away, Ray has an idea to get off the freeway and cut through basically the really low slung and slumming areas of the city. And this is where things, of course, tend to go wrong for all of our weary travellers. From here, they cut through a residential area which is filled with gangsters, drug dealers, crime, you name it. And what happens is that they come across a man that they hit accidentally. And his name is Teddy. They find that he's been shot and that he's got money on him in a paper bag. So from here, the RV they're in is sideswiped by a car. And this car leads them into crashing into, of course, a narrow alleyway. The three gangsters, Rhodes, Travis, and Sykes, these are the guys that are basically going to be hunting these guys down. They've forced their way in and grabbed Teddy, who's asking them to take them wherever, get him free of these guys. And, of course, he gets dragged out and pulled in front of the crime lord by the name of Fallon. Of course, this is Dennis Leary, folks. From here, no mucking around, Fallon is all business and executes Teddy on the spot for stealing from him. Then, of course, can't have any witnesses. One of the big rules of being a professional crime fighter, or crime lord, I should say. He ain't no crime fighter. He's just putting people out of business here and there, and obviously taking all the money for himself here. He is definitely a baron, a crime baron. For me, the friends are basically hunted down by Fallon and, of course, his three hoods into a train area, basically a big rail station. And from here, they hide in a tiny little streetcar, which inside also has homeless people all trying to keep out from the elements. And of course, this is where a little bit of blackmail comes into keeping things going. And of course, they hand over their goods, their valuables, things that they got on to keep those people quiet. And of course, from here, Fallon, finding out what's happening, starts killing some of the homeless. Of course, it mistakes them for the people that they are. From here, they also go to an apartment building, and this is where the four basically try to call the police and course, before they any authorities can get there. The four hunting them chase them down to the complex. From here, they meet two girls that take them in and give them a chance to try and find some solace. Of course, all the phones are cut, and of course, the gangsters start leading up to the top of the building, where a couple of them are able to get across a tight beam to another building. But of course, Ray, who's kind of the cowardly lion of the bunch, decides to stay. He just can't face the heights and, of course, going across. But he's got the gift of the gab and thinks he can talk his way out of course, being a witness that gets killed. Just to the death, of course, of the one and only Teddy. So from here, on the other side, we've got Frank, John, and Mike watching Ray try and barter his way out of existence. And he almost does, so they think. But of course, Fallon is all business. And Fallon says, you know, at the end of the day, you're a witness. You're loose end. And you've got to get rid of him. From here, the trio watch. And of course, once they see Fallon, yeah, they know that it's going to be them next. And of course, they take off. From here, pretty much the last 30 minutes of the film is them going to the streets and actually hunting the hunters to a point. And then, of course, a great showdown between Fallon and Frank. And it's a lot of taunting, a lot of parrying, but even Frank, you know, taunting then, of course, Fallon, things get interesting. And it really is one of those interesting style ones, too. So from there, at the end, we have, obviously, Frank and his brother living. Of course, Mike and John go to hospital afterwards, but Frank's the only one that really gets to get free and, of course, get to see his wife again, all that sort of stuff. It's quite an interesting one. All right, let's have a look at background on this, too, as we get into the cast. Basically, Kevin Jarre, better known for, of course, doing the script of Tombstone, put this out in a spec script under the name of Escape, around 1989. And it was based on an idea by Richard DeLillo and, of course, Lawrence Gordon. People who are behind the films of, like, Predator, Die Hard. And, of course, they brought it in the back in about 1990. This is where they had ideas to really get things out there and, of course, you know, really push something that's definitely a one-night, you know, affair. Like, a little bit like Die Hard, you know, it's all happening within a space of 24 hours or so, or whatever. And that's what makes this, you know, the top clock is ticking, basically, as we go through. So this, obviously, they got the director, Stephen Hopkins, involved in this, using, of course, Jarre's script. And, of course, that one, original one, was much darker than what was done. And it had different writers, John Carpenter, William Wisher, Christopher Crowe involved in different versions of it as well, and it had bikers in the desert outside LA and rooftop motorcycle chases involved in those ones too. Hopkins himself wanted John Travolta in the lead role and Kevin Spacey in the main villain role. Others including Ray Liotta, Christian Slater, Samuel L. Jackson, even Tom Cruise were offered, but most of them turned it down. And again, it would have been interesting to see. The final cast ended up having as Frank White, Emilio Estevez playing the family man in this. Of course, also not only bringing up a family and a lovely wife, also helping his younger brother. Cuba Gooding Jr. playing Mike Peterson. And Mike Peterson's a great character because he's kind of like the one that wants to stay with the old, you know, ways and stuff like that, the younger versions of themselves. And of course, he starts to see towards the end of the film that that's not the way to go as you get older. Dennis Leary is Fallon, who's basically the hunter in this, and he's, you know, henchman working for him. He's charismatic to a point, but he's just business all the way through. And one of the big things about that is that, you know, he needs to keep things on an even keel. And one of those being keep witnesses out of his work. Stephen Dorff at the time, obviously rising actor in terms of skill, back here and doing a fantastic job, plays John White, obviously Frank's brother. And he's the one that's invited out with him, even though he doesn't tend to hang around with the friends too much as well. One of the more famous ones these days now is, of course, Jeremy Piven, back here playing Ray Cochran. He's the one, obviously, who rents out the RV to bring along to the match. Now, what's great about Jeremy is, of course, he's gone to, you know, huge credit over the years. Lots of comedies and action and all that sort of stuff. Black Hawk Down, obviously, he's known for as well. But always very reliable talent and one that, you know, and this doesn't disappoint. He's got the gift of the gab. We have Everlast in this as Rhodes, one of the many Fallon's minions. They're kind of very cool, you know, guys, you know, in this. And each one of them has kind of got their own little idiosyncrasy and sort of a fashion sense in this too. Peter Green, obviously from Pulp Fiction, plays Sykes in this. He also was in The Mask. He's pretty much the go-to guy to play henchman back in the 90s, folks. Very good in this as well. Michael Wiseman as Travis, one of the Fallon's minions, and of course Michael DeLorenzo as Teddy. Who again, Michael DeLorenzo was in a lot of stuff back there too. And then we have in a smaller role as Linda Wyatt, Frank's wife, is of course Christine Harnos as well. Now the film did fairly well out here in Australia. It's one that it was hard to find on VHS. Now the reason I say that, there was a lot of copies of VHS of this film, but what it was you'd see this one hanging up, and if it was there, you grabbed it. It was one of those movies that you knew, you know, back especially in 93, that it was going to be a good night on VHS at home. You know, just chilling out, watching the movie. But critically, didn't do quite as well. It debuted about number 5 and did about $12 million in gross at the box office. But Rotten Tomatoes only give it 35%. Somehow I think that's undercooked, but that's just me. Metacritic gave it 46%, and mixed or average sort of feel. And Leonard of Varieties, Leonard Chiodi Variety, he says, the most chilling aspect of the urban thriller Judgment Night is how infinitely superior its craft is to its art. This is an exceedingly well-directed, cleverly filmed and edited, tension-filled affair. It is a wholly preposterous, muddled, paranoid view of the inner city nightmare where the slightest misstep is sure to have a fateful result. It's a very interesting way of looking at it. And I think, too, what is interesting about, you know, the take on this film is that it could be viewed as that, you know, when it comes to, obviously, the critical response of it being, you know, obviously a little muddled here and there, and in some ways doesn't even hit 50% on scores here and there. But one of the great things I think about the film is that it pulls you back in. The characters really do jump out from the page of the script and, of course, from the film itself too. So for me, it does a lot more, and you'll see with my rating very, very soon too. So one of the big draws from this film is the soundtrack. And the soundtrack was quite good. It had a lot of rap and rock elements brought together and some great bands sort of forming. And the whole idea was a lot of soundtracks back then used this. Spawn soundtrack, The Crow soundtrack to a certain extent, some others. And what they do is they really fuse. And it's a clash. It's a collision of different things. And, of course, one of them being rap element or hip-hop element and a grungy sort of down-tuned guitar element. So track number one was with Helmet and House of Pain together. I do remember the actual film clip of that one too. It was called Just Another Victim. Then there was by Teenage Fan Club and De La Soul. The band did Fallen in that one. Third track was Me, Myself, and My Microphone by Living Colour and Run DMC. Living Colour, fantastic band, folks. If you haven't had a chance to listen to some of their stuff, it's some of the greatest guitar work by Vernon Reid in that. And, of course, Corey Glover. Amazing vocals as well, and plus Run DMC in that. Then we've got obviously the Hard Knocks crew of Biohazard and Onyx with Judgment Night itself, which is a, you know, from the much earlier release of theirs. Disorder by Slayer and Ice-T. I mean, what two acts to put together there too. That's fantastic. Now the big one that we had out here in Australia was Another Body Birded by Faith No More and of course Booyah Tribe, which is quite a big song out here in Australia. Sonic Youth and Cypress Hill did, of course, I Love You, Mary Jane. Freak Mama by Mudhoney and Sir Mix-a-Lot. Now, that's an interesting collision there. Dinosaur Jr. and Del the Funky Homo Sapien also did Missing Link, Come and Die by Therapy and Fatal, and of course, my Seattle favourites, Pearl Jam and Cypress Hill on the side there did Real Thing as well, which is really interesting too. So again, it's one of those collaboration style, hip-hop and rock together. Certainly was an interesting one, folks. One that I think is well worth time for a lot of people to, you know, come back and check out and enjoy more than anything. So, I mean, for those that haven't had a chance to really dig into it, go and check it out because it is great. So, all right, let's get to the actual thoughts on the film itself. Now you've found out what it's all about. Personally, I love it. I love the fact that it's a film and a script and a story that was given a chance to, as a whole, the film really crunched down on the fact that, you know, you can do a film and have character time for everybody in it. And, you know, maybe that's something that doesn't happen with a lot of them, but it certainly happened to this lot. It did it well, without a doubt. Like, it works what it is, which is interesting, you know. And I think it's something that, you know, the testament to Stephen Hopkins, who's a fantastic director, one that really knows effects work, obviously, working in Nightmare on Elm Street series, plus Lost in Space, which was a few years after this one, but also working in action. And action is not an easy thing to work in, folks. We know that, too. Some of the greatest set pieces in this were, of course, just the start, running through those streets. I thought, you know, the work in the RV as well really sets the pace for what we're going to see later in the films. Obviously, too, when they're in the buildings and in the sewers taking on the teams as well. And, of course, in the small goods store where, of course, they'd have the big showdown. It's tightly woven in story and it really, really works. High points, of course, of Dennis Leary. Without a doubt, steals the show. Emilio is pretty much phoning in a lot of the performance, but it's still, yeah, he's our window into this world. I think Cuba Gooding Jr. does a fantastic job in this as the friend that really wants everyone to just to be happy and, you know, stay the same, stay the status quo. Stephen Dorff, great in this. Jeremy Piven, knocking it out of the park as well as obviously the others too. This film, folks, gets a whopping 4 out of 5 here on the Hallenbach Scale of Lee the Muller Podcast.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery, and of course, Picard, plus the Orville. But also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.